track 6. And this is Brian Gall back in harness at the sports desk. Following my break last week, we've got plenty of news to catch up with. First, as usual, the local cricket scene, and I return from my holiday to find Hagley second from top of the Worcestershire County Cricket League Division 1 and only 1 point behind the leaders, Cookley. This followed last Saturday's easy 101-run victory over Feckenham. But the Pedmore club, playing in the same division, took part in a real slugfest in their match against Eastnor. Pedmore batted first and were all out for 86 runs. But it can't all have been down to poor batting, for Eastnor just scrambled a one-wicket victory, reaching a total of 87 for 9. Dan Jones, Pedmore's captain, was their top scorer with 23 runs. Only one other batsman got into double figures, and it was the same when Eastnor batted. In their case, only one man made it into double figures. I think it's probably fair to say the Eastnor wicket was taking spin. In the second division, local sides Old Swinford and Bell Broughton both won at the weekend. Old Swinford appear to be recovering from a poor start to the season. This was their fourth win, and they're now nearly up to the middle of the league table. On Saturday, they enjoyed a strong 6-wicket victory against Coombs Wood. Bell Broughton had a bit more of a struggle, but they overcame Wormalo in a tight finish, winning by 2 wickets in the very last over. But Lye Cricket Club lost their match, well beaten by Chadsley Corbett. In the third division of the Birmingham League, Stourbridge Cricket Club, who were relegated from Division 2 at the end of last season, are trying their best to return whence they came. They've had a couple of big wins recently and are chasing second place in the league table, which would be enough to see them go up at the end of the season. Now, how have our local speedway teams been performing while I was away? The first shock on my return was to look at the Premiership League table and see that the Wolverhampton Wolves were no longer top dogs. However, this shock was mainly due to the Wolves not having many league fixtures, allowing other sides to catch up. Most of the chasing pack had had matches in hand. In fact, the Wolves took part in only one league fixture towards the end of June, a visit to Swindon, and it must have been a humdinger, for they lost it by a single point. The Wolves had been on the back foot from the very first heat of this contest, but towards the end of the meeting they fought back magnificently. Their riders finished first and third in the last 2 heats. If they had managed to swap one of those third places for a second, they'd have won the match. It was that close. The club's only other action was a 48-42 victory in the home leg of the Knockout Cup competition against Leicester, but the away leg at the Leicester track is still to come. The Cradley Heathens also seem to have spent their time on the sidelines of the National League until this week, when they burst into life with an away fixture against Stoke on Sunday and a home match against Buxton on Monday. They lost the away match by 47-43 at Stoke, but made up for that the following evening with a convincing 53-37 defeat of Buxton. Saturday, the 1st of July, was the date when the players of Stourbridge Football Club, the Glass Boys, reported at the Memorial Ground to begin pre-season training. Yes, it won't be long before soccer action begins yet again. And there must have been a fair few introductions being performed as the players met, because a lot of new faces have joined the squad for the coming season. A few other old hands who'd moved elsewhere have returned to the fold, including Ryan Rowe, who left the club 2 or 3 years ago to try his luck at a higher level. If he can achieve anything like the goal-scoring record he achieved when he was a regular in the team 3 or 4 years ago, it'll be a very welcome return indeed. I returned from my short holiday in time to be in position in front of the television on Saturday morning for the second Lions versus All Black rugby test match taking place in the very soggy New Zealand capital, Wellington. Going into this match one down after the loss the week before, it was either a case of the Blacks wrapping up the series with another victory or of the Lions selling their souls and somehow finding the means to overcome. That they did, and splendidly. There was no messing about here. It was total commitment from our lads. Every man knew what his job was and they set to it with a will. The New Zealanders were never allowed to settle, to dominate. They were rushed, they were pushed back. How delightful it was to see an All Black take a pass or make a catch and find himself deposited 10 yards behind where he started. The Lions even managed a few handling moves of their own that their opponents would have been proud of. But my goodness, it was nerve-wracking. The scores were tit-for-tat through the first half, Lions cancelling out All Black penalties one after another. Our sloppiest period was during the first half of the second half, if you see what I mean, when we appeared to be on the back foot, gave away territory and possession, and more seriously, conceded needless penalties. If the New Zealand kicker had taken advantage of all these opportunities, we'd have lost the match. But even so, at 18 points to 9 behind, and with barely 20 minutes left, it looked like a lost cause. But then a brilliant handling move and a try finished off by Faletau brought the Lions within sight of the Blacks. Another 3 points for a penalty conceded. But then it was back upfield, all-out attack, a quick dive for the line by Connor Murray through a gap the New Zealand defence had overlooked, a successful conversion from Farrell, and the scores were level. Now it was about possession of the ball in the All Blacks' half of the field, try to make them concede a penalty, which they duly obliged, and ice-cool Farrell did the business again. There was still a couple of minutes to go, but New Zealand were rattled by now. They lost possession of the ball, found themselves defending at their end while Lions calmly controlled the situation and saw out the dying seconds. However, there may be a day of reckoning. A three-match series will be settled on Saturday, and you can be certain New Zealand will try every trick in the book to ensure they take the series. For the Lions, even selling their souls may not be enough. I think that I said when I was last in this chair a fortnight ago that my two favourite sports are probably rugby and tennis, so I'm enjoying a surfeit at present now that the Wimbledon fortnight is upon us. There have been many fears expressed about Andy Murray's fitness. He has an ongoing hip injury, but he seemed to show few ill effects when he won his opening round match in three sets on Monday. His second round opponent, Dustin Brown, is a dangerous wild card, however, and Andy will need to be on his mettle today, Wednesday. Best British performance on the opening day probably belonged to Alias Bedani, who outlasted, or maybe that should read, outblasted, Ivo Karlovic. Karlovic, about 6 foot 10 inches tall, has an enormous service and he surely must hold the record for the most matches taken to a tiebreak. The score in this match, with Bedani first, read 6-7, 7-6, 6-7, 7-6, then finally 8-6 to the Brit, who did at last break his opponent's serve in the final game of the match after more than 4 hours on court. Kyle Edmund made his appearance on Tuesday. Amazingly enough, for a man ranked inside the world's top 50, he'd never previously survived the first round at Wimbledon. But this time he had a favourable draw against James Ward, another Brit ranked way down in the high hundreds. Edmund got off to a slow start and lost the first set, but thereafter cottoned onto his game and he ran out an easy winner in four sets. Among the ladies, comfortable first round wins for Jo Konta and Heather Watson, but I felt particularly sorry for Laura Robson, who was beaten in straight sets on the opening day. Poor Laura is still struggling to return to something like her previous form following a wrist injury, which kept her off the courts entirely for about 18 months, and she is finding the road back long and tedious. Chasing not too far behind tennis and rugby on my favourites list is athletics, and I'm greatly looking forward to the World Championships due to take place at the former Olympic Stadium in London later in August. The trials for the British team were held at Birmingham's Alexander Stadium last weekend and did not entirely run true to what everyone thought the form was. The general rule is that the first and second place competitors in each event are selected for the British team, although we are allowed 3 athletes in the team for each discipline. But there were a number of surprises at the weekend. For example, Rhys Prescott, an athlete I admit I had never heard of before, won the 100 metres with James Dasaulu second, edging out Jumili and Udja, who must surely have been penciled in already by the selectors. Among the ladies, Dina Asher-Smith, struggling to return to her best after a serious foot injury, was left trailing in 6th place in the women's 100 metres final. She holds the British record in the event, but she must be a doubt for the World Championship team. And an old favourite who now seems unlikely to feature in the London Championships is Christine Ohorogo. She was unable to make even the final of the 400 metres in the Birmingham trials. Gosh, it is a busy time in the sporting world. Just this week, we will have the first of 3 cricket test matches, England versus South Africa, starting at Lord's on Thursday. All this week, and for the next 2 after that, the Tour de France cycling is wending its way uphill and down Dale to finish on the Champs-Élysées. The UK's Team Sky have high hopes in that, and on next week's sports report, I'll bring you a progress report. But I suppose the highlight, for me at any rate, will be Saturday morning's third and final rugby test, New Zealand versus the British and Irish Lions, back in Auckland, where the first match was played. Lions' hopes are high after that deserved and scintillating win last weekend, but I somehow fear they're going to face a terrible backlash from the home side, and I'll be both delighted and somewhat astonished if they prevail. Anyway, that's for next week's report. I hope you've enjoyed this week's version, and I look forward to being with you again next time. Until then, it's goodbye from Brian Gall.